Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to officially call this meeting to order. All the representatives of the commission are present. I am California State Controller Malia Cohen, and I'm joined in person by our Lieutenant Governor, Ms. Eleni Kounalakis. We are also joined virtually by Commissioner Michelle Perrault, who is representing the Department of Finance. Good afternoon, Michelle. Good to see you.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. So for the vote, for those in the audience, the State Lands Commission manages state property interests in over 5 million acres of land, including mineral interests. The commission also hears responsibility for the prevention of oil spills at marine oil terminals and offshore platforms and islands, and for preventing the introduction of marine invasive species into California's marine waters. Today, we're going to hear requests and presentations involving the lands and resources within the commission's jurisdiction. So, what I'd like to do at this moment is just take a brief pause. I want to acknowledge and express the gratitude, some gratitude to the Chumash people whose lands we are meeting on today. The Chumash have maintained a consistent and constant presence on the landscape living on this coast and fishing in these waters for countless generations. I also want to take a moment to honor the California Native American communities all across the state for persisting, carrying on diverse cultural and linguistic traditions, and sustainably managing the lands that we all now share. Native people have maintained a constant presence on the landscape for many thousands of years, and they are an essential stewardship partner. Now, whether we're talking along the coast, along our rivers and valleys, or in our fragile deserts, we thank the Native American communities for participating in this commission's activities and for their essential role in maintaining and adding to our state's rich cultural legacy. Next, I would like to welcome Mayor Pro Tem Luz Reyes Martin to come to the mic and give us some brief remarks. It's good to see you. Hi.
Hello. Welcome to
Thank you.
Goleta. And welcome to our many community members who are here. On behalf of the mayor and city council, I'm Luz Reyes Martin, our mayor pro tem. A warm welcome to the commission, to Controller Cohen, our Lieutenant Governor Kounalakis, and our Commissioner Perrault, who's joining us over Zoom with the assistance of your wonderful staff. So thank you so much for being here again in Goleta. I wanted to just take a moment to thank you and the commission for your leadership and work in removal of the Piers 421, which you were last here to celebrate, the ongoing decommissioning, plugging, and abandonment work at Platform Holly, and your work in shutting down the Elwood onshore facility. I'm pleased to share that the city of Goleta is just so happy to see the legacy of oil infrastructure going away as the state of California leads in the transition to a renewable energy economy. And Goleta, as a city and community, are happy to continue to partner with you. So thank you so much for being here and welcome again to Goleta.
Thank you. I would like to just recognize our Zoom hosts, Mike Farina and Michelle Pelka, and then also our meeting liaison, Kim Lunetta. Thank you very much for your help in helping and assisting us in the facilitation of this meeting. The next item of business will be public comment, our favorite time on the agenda. Personally, something that I look forward to. It's an opportunity for the public to come in and weigh in and share their ideas with us. And before I open public comment period for items that are not on the agenda, I just want to thank everyone, especially our stakeholders, for taking the time out to be a part of this democratic process. This is important that all members of the public interact and engage in this proceeding. And I know that you could be anywhere in Goleta. But you've chosen to be here with us. So I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Lucchese to quickly share some instructions. The instructions are very simple, our rules of engagement and the best way that everyone will have an opportunity to participate in today's meeting. Ms. Lucchese.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
For public comment, we will take those members of the public who are here in person first and then hear comments from those members of the public who are participating virtually. If you would like to speak either during our open public comment period or during a public comment period that is part of an agenda item, please complete our electronic request to speak form available on our website, or there are links when you walk into the room here. We will call on you in the order in which you submitted the request to speak form. For those participating virtually, please make sure you have your microphones and phones muted to avoid background noise. To help us call on you through Zoom, please raise your hand during the appropriate comment section in one of two ways. First, if you're on the Zoom platform, you can raise your hand. If you are new to Zoom and you joined our meeting using the Zoom application, you can click on the hand icon at the bottom of your screen. When you click on that hand, it will raise your hand. If you are joining our meeting by phone, you must press *9 on your keypad to raise your hand and make a comment. If you are calling in and want to view the meeting, including the PowerPoint presentations, please view the meeting through the CalSpan Live webcast link. There will be a slight time delay, but it will avoid an echo or feedback from using the Zoom application and your phone. We will call on individuals who have raised their hands in the order that they are raised using the names that they registered or the last three digits of their identifying phone number. After you are called on, you will be unmuted so you can share your comments. Please also remember to unmute your computer or phone and identify yourself. And you will have a limit of 3 minutes to speak on an item. Please keep your comments respectful and focused. We will mute anyone who fails to follow these guidelines or, at worst, dismiss them from the meeting. I also want to remind everyone that we have two general public comment opportunities, one at the beginning of the meeting and one at the end of the meeting. So if anyone is having logistical or technical difficulties, please know that you have another opportunity to provide your comments at the end of our meeting. The Commission has also established an email address to compile public comments for our meetings. We have received various emails from parties that have been shared with all the commissioners prior to the meeting. If we receive any emails during the meeting, they will be shared with the commissioners and made available on our website, along with all the other public comment letters and emails we've received. We do have a number of public commenters who signed up to speak during public comment or item 70, which is an informational item noticing the public that we will be discussing the lease assignment application between Exxon and Sable in closed session. What we have done to be more efficient and respectful of the public commenters' time is move those who have identified to speak on item 70 to the public comment period so that your comments can be heard at the beginning of our meeting. I just wanna make that clear. And our staff is working behind the scenes to compile all of those names. So they will be called during the public comment period that will begin now.
All right, thank you very much, Ms. Lucchese. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to make one brief introduction. I just want to recognize the chairman of the Chumash tribes are here. Gabriel, if you could just stand up, we just want to recognize you. And also with him is an elder spiritual guide named Mata. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being here. I think you were not in the chamber when I did a small land acknowledgement thanking the Chumash for being hosts and allowing us to have our meeting on your land. Thank you so much. Course. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, I know you come a long way and you're so excited to share your thoughts with us, and we are equally as excited to hear. You'll come up to this podium to speak, and let's go ahead and get started. Hold on a minute. All right, our next order of business will be the public comment. If anyone wants to address the commission on any matter that's not on today's agenda, you are free and welcome to do so. The staff will call on those who are here in this chamber first, and then you will have 3 minutes to provide your comments. Then next, we will move to those that are joining us virtually. Michelle, could you please call the first person who'd like to make public comment?
Yes, our first commenter is Tevin Schmidt. Tevin, please make your way to the podium to begin your comment. After Tevin, we will have Jeremy Frankel. Tevin, once you make your way to the podium, please begin your comment.
Good afternoon, Commission members. My name is Tevin Schmidt. I'm the watershed scientist for the Wishtoyo Chumash Foundation and associate director of Ventura Coastkeeper. On behalf of Wishtoyo, I urge the commission to deny Exxon and Popco's lease transfer to Sable Offshore Corp. The reassignment of these leases to Sable directly contradicts State Land Commission's mission. Allowing Sable to take over Exxon's assets will increase fossil fuel production along California's coast, defying the state's goals to reach carbon neutrality by 2045. This transfer would be a major step for Sable to restart operations of Exxon's San Ynez unit. The restart of these operations threatens public access of coastal areas, cultural resources, guarantees poor air quality, threatens sensitive coastal and marine habitats, and a massive piece of Santa Barbara's economy. This lease transfer would have far-reaching consequences beyond state lands or offshore impacts. The restart of the San Ynez unit would necessitate the restart of the Las Flores Canyon Processing Facility, the county's largest source of greenhouse gas emissions, volatile organic compounds, formaldehyde, and PM2.5, before shutting down operations in 2015. There has yet to be any real progress on the construction of new pipelines associated with the San Ynez unit restart. Lines 901 and 903 are nearly 40 years old and have experienced extensive corrosion, upwards of 70% in some areas, which led, and this extensive corrosion led to the 2015 Refugio oil spill. These lines have experienced an additional 9 years of corrosion since that event. If Sable is allowed to restart these operations, an oil spill would be inevitable. All offshore platforms associated with the lease transfer were constructed in the 1980s. The average lifespan of these platforms is 20 to 30 years. Aging infrastructure poses a massive risk of oil spills. The pipelines included in this potential lease transfer are also just as old as these ancient rigs. Underwater pipelines are susceptible to corrosion from seawater exposure and can be damaged by mudslides and certain types of fishing. Additionally, leaks are notoriously difficult to detect in offshore pipelines when they occur, delaying the response in the case of a catastrophic event. Any steps to restart the operation of these decrepit rigs could spell disaster for marine ecosystems, regional air quality, cultural resources, our sensitive coast, and Santa Barbara's economy. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Our next speaker is Jeremy Frankel. Jeremy, please make your way to the podium. After following Jeremy, we will have Ryan Smith.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeremy Frankel. I'm an attorney with the Environmental Defense Center. My comment today concerns the proposed lease assignments from Exxon to Sable. As commission staff reviews these lease assignment applications, Public Resources Code Section 6005 requires that it consider whether the assignments are in the best interest of the state. We're concerned that the commission's review may be too narrow in this regard. We're concerned that the commission may solely be considering whether Sable is likely to comply with the terms of the leases pursuant to Section 6804. Section 6804 is intended to provide helpful guidance to the commission, but is not intended to be the sole extent of the commission's best interest analysis. It states only that the commission may consider an assignee's likelihood of compliance. It does not state that the commission must do so, or suggests that it is the only thing that the commission must consider. In other words, Section 6804 does not purport to limit the commission's best interest analysis to whether Sable will comply with the leases. That said, we agree that the commission should consider Sable's likelihood of compliance as part of its review, but to properly evaluate the state's best interests, the commission must consider the full extent of the impacts of these assignments. The assignments would directly facilitate Sable's plans to restart all of its SYU facilities, including its corroded onshore pipelines that ruptured in 2015. As you'll hear today, should Sable restart these compromised pipelines, another spill is all but inevitable, and it could be far more severe than the Refugio spill. Recently, Sable sued EDC and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to try and withhold from the public vital information about the risks of operating these pipelines. After prevailing in court last week, we did receive that information. One of the things that we learned is that, per Sable's estimate, a spill could be 14 times the volume of the Refugio spill, and that we believe is a conservative estimate. What we also learned last week is that Sable does not have an adequate plan in place to respond to a spill, nor has it yet demonstrated that it is financially capable of remediating a spill. Facilitating Sable's dangerous restart plans is not in the best interest of the state, and it's not in the best interest of our community. And while we recognize that the commission cannot unreasonably withhold approval, the unacceptable risks of a restart provide ample reason to do so. We ask that the commission uphold its duty to protect our best interests, uphold its duty to protect our public trust resources, and deny the applications. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Our next speaker is Ryan Smith. After Ryan, we have Brady Bradshaw.
Good afternoon. My name is Ryan Smith, and I'm a law clerk working for the Environmental Defense Center. My comments today relate to the proposed lease assignments to Sable Offshore Corporation. These lease assignments would directly facilitate the restart of the San Ynez unit, which includes the onshore pipeline that ruptured in 2015 at Refugio Beach. Since then, various entities have persistently attempted to restart the San Ynez unit. One of the proposals was to construct a new pipeline. Santa Barbara County reviewed this application and drafted an environmental impact report, in which they analyzed restarting the existing pipeline as an alternative to constructing the new pipeline. In that report, the county predicted that if the pipeline were restarted, we could expect it to leak once a year and rupture every 4 years. Further, the county calculated that the volume of a worst-case spill from the pipeline would be twice the size of the rupture that occurred at Refugio Beach. If Sable is allowed to restart this pipeline, it's not a question of if the pipeline will fail, but when. This is clearly not in the best interest of the people of California, and it's inconsistent with CSLC's obligation to protect public trust resources. Thank you.
Next speaker.
Slight change in plans. It appears we have a representative. Jordy Scully, please make your way to the podium to begin your comment.
Hi, thank you. I'm Jordy Scully. I'm here on behalf of Senator Monique Limon. I just wanted to appreciate you all for coming down to Goleta to hear everyone in person speak. We're so grateful to have this opportunity. And I also want to thank everyone who showed up in support of these issues. And we're here listening as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Please give our best to the senator. All right, Brady.
Thank you, commissioners and staff. My name is Brady Bradshaw. I'm here today on behalf of the Center for Biological Diversity and our over 1.7 million members and supporters, many of whom live, work, and recreate in Santa Barbara County. We're extremely concerned about the applications you've received from ExxonMobil and Sable Offshore Corporation, asking you to approve the assignment of four leases for aging oil and gas pipelines in state waters to Sable. While these applications might be viewed in isolation by some as a paperwork exercise, that's far from the truth. These leases are a critical piece of Sable's plans to restart the entire San Ynez unit operation from the offshore platforms to the onshore processing facilities and compromised pipelines. We can't stress enough how concerning these applications are, and we urge the commission to view these applications in their full context, to request and review all necessary documentation, to put first and foremost its duty to protect public trust resources, and to ultimately deny the applications. Some of our greatest concerns are that Sable Offshore Corporation doesn't have the track record, the staffing, the leadership, the plans, or the finances to comply with the terms of these leases. We're worried that they can't protect our precious coast and coastal communities from another, potentially even more devastating, and what we've learned from the records request today, certainly more devastating than the oil spill we faced in 2015 from the onshore pipeline, which experts now estimate was over 450,000 gallons of oil. Like lines 901, 903, the offshore oil and gas infrastructure has aged beyond its projected lifespan and needs to be decommissioned, not restarted, to protect California's communities, local fisheries, natural and cultural resources, air and water quality, and public safety. We've seen nothing from Sable that gives us the confidence that it would meet its spill response or ultimate decommissioning responsibilities. Granting the assignments would be a significant change in the status quo. It's been over 9 years since the Refugio oil spill, 9 years of not worrying consistently about the next big spill, 9 years without harmful pollution, air pollution from the San Ynez unit. Santa Barbara's county's largest source of GHGs, VOCs, formaldehyde, and PM2.5. And it's been decades since state agencies have assessed the environmental impacts of the SYU operations. We know so much more about the risks, harms, and financial burdens of oil spills today, unfortunately. Your mission statement says you provide the people of California with effective stewardship of the lands, waterways, and resources entrusted to your care based on the principles of equity, sustainability, and resiliency. We are counting on you to do just that here and deny these lease assignments. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Our next speaker is Lorelei Moosbrugger. After Lorelei, we'll have Jonathan Ullman. Lorelei, please make your way to the podium and begin your comment.
Thank you. It's Lorelei Moosbrugger, and I'm representing the League of Women Voters of Santa Barbara and the Environmental Action Committee. Thank you for hearing us today. The League of Women Voters of Santa Barbara would like to express our grave concern about the future possibility of reassignment of the leases currently held by ExxonMobil to Sable Corporation for the Santa Ynez oil unit. Granting the lease assignment would facilitate the restart of offshore drilling platforms, onshore processing facilities, and most importantly, the onshore pipeline, which ruptured in 2015 due to extensive corrosion and spilled a huge amount of oil on the Gaviota Coast. The impacts on both wildlife and humans, as well as the local economy, were severe. It is not clear that the pipeline can ever be adequately fixed to ensure that Santa Barbara County will not be plagued yet again with another devastating oil spill. We are also concerned about the impacts on air quality should onshore processing facilities restart, since they were top emitters of greenhouse gas and numerous pollutants before they were shut down in 2015 after the spill. We want to make it clear that there is strong and broad community opposition and that we strongly urge you to not grant the lease reassignment when the time comes to finalize that decision. Thank you again.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Our next speaker is Jonathan Ullman. Following Jonathan, we will have Carla Frisk. Jonathan, please make your way to the podium to begin your comment.
Thank you. I want to thank the commission for the opportunity to speak. My name is Jonathan Ullman. I'm the director of the Santa Barbara Ventura chapter of the Sierra Club. I would like to say that we have members of our community here to speak about this issue. And one of them is Katie Davis, who will be speaking. She is the she's the chair of the Santa Barbara Ventura chapter. And I'll just say this, I'm a little nervous because there's so many people, but that's a good thing. Okay, offshore oil drilling was shut down after the 2015 Refugio Beach disaster, in which a corroded onshore pipeline, Plains pipeline, burst, sending 450,000 gallons of crude in the Santa Barbara Channel, resulting in 202 dead birds, 99 dead mammals, 46 sea lions, and 12 dolphins. They all died. There's a lot at stake here, and we really appreciate we appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you. We're happy to be here. Honored to be a part of this process. Next speaker.
Our next speaker is Carla Frisk. Following Carla, we will have Deanne Plaster. Carla, please make your way to the podium to begin your comment.
Okay, I'm here. My name is Carla Frisk, and I'm here representing Get Oil Out. And I want to add my thanks, too, to the State Lands Commission for coming all the way down here, as it frequently does, to hear in person, direct, and upfront from the members of the community. We have a lot of oil development on our channel and our area, and we really appreciate your willingness to engage with us. I'm here to speak on the same item, the transfer of the leases from Exxon to Sable. GOO has, as you know, GOO was formed in the aftermath of the disastrous 1969 oil spill in Santa Barbara. We have witnessed, therefore, two pretty large oil spills since our inception 55 years ago, hard to believe, the second one being the 2015 spill on the Gaviota Coast. As our name implies, we want oil out of Santa Barbara County. It's just that simple. We are therefore opposing the transfer of all of Exxon's oil facilities to Sable. Sable is a little-known company. Other speakers have already said a lot about this, so I won't go into the details, but we know very little about its financial resources. And we know what happened when ExxonMobil sold its interests in the South Elwood field to Venoco. Following the 2015 oil pipeline rupture, Venoco went bankrupt, leaving the state of California and specifically the State Lands Commission holding the bag. I don't have to tell this commission how many problems that has caused, and they aren't over yet. We're not done yet. We cannot afford to even take a remote chance of that repeating that scenario. So therefore, when the item comes up before you later this year or early next, we urge the commission to deny those lease transfers. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Our next speaker is Deanne Plaister. After Deanne, we will have Lee Heller. Deanne, please make your way to the podium to begin your comment.
Commissioners, my name is Dean Plaister. I'm a member of the Executive Committee of the Surf Rider Foundation Santa Barbara Chapter. I'd like to request that the Commission not grant the reassignment of drilling leases from Exxon to Sable Offshore. Doing so would bring oil operations back online from drilling to piping to processing. These operations involve significant air pollution impacts to the Santa Barbara area, as well as the renewed threat of a pipeline blowout, pipeline leak. In 2015, I got to see up close and personal what that looks like. I was one of the outraged citizens who was at Venadito Beach, just east of Refugio, the morning after the Plains All-American pipeline burst. I was scooping spilled oil into 5-gallon buckets all day. I don't want to see a mess like that again. Please don't reassign those leases. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean.
Our next speaker is Lee Heller. After Lee, we will have Bill Woodbridge. Lee, please make your way to the podium to begin your comment.
Thank you. Chair Cohen and members of the commission, thank you for being here, as so many other speakers have said. I've been in front of this commission several times over the last 20 years, and the theme is always the same. It's always corporate polluters who are producing oil and gas and then leaving their mess behind for the state to clean up. I was an intern for the Environmental Defense Center in front of you in 2022 or 23 about the Chevron shell mounds. I was in front of you in 2015 about the abandoned wells in Summerland, where I lived for 18 years and where my state senator had to pass legislation so the state can start paying for all of this abandoned leaking infrastructure. I'm here in front of you again today to say, please do not, when this item comes before you in the future, transfer leases to a company with no solid track record of doing its due diligence on environmental protection. In fact, just the opposite from what we can tell. We have a history on this coastline with living with the messes that the petroleum industry makes and that we then have to live with afterwards. The state then has to pay out of pocket to clean up those messes. So let's not keep making the same mistake. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker will be Bill Woodbridge. Bill, please make your way to the podium to begin your comment. After Bill, we will have Francine McClintock.
Hi, commissioners. My name is Bill Woodbridge. I'm a resident here in Goleta. There is no reason to believe that the pipelines going out to the platforms are in any better condition than the corroded pipeline that burst on land in 2015. Especially considering that they've been subjected to salt water for 40 years. The pipelines and the platforms are way beyond their useful life. That is a nightmare waiting to happen. I know the commission is familiar with the two pipelines that were severed down by Huntington Beach by two ships who were pushed one way or the other by storms, thereby dragging their anchors across the two pipelines, which cut the pipelines, which resulted in the spill. So a break might not even be the fault of the oil company, unless it's a corroded bad pipe. It might be something else, dragging fishing nets along the bottom. There's no assurance that those pipelines will be safe and not broken. I work as a volunteer seabird animal rescuer and transporter, mostly pelicans, large seabirds, small seabirds. About 25% of the calls I go out on are oiled birds. They can't fly when they're oiled. when they try to preen themselves to get the oil off, they ingest the toxins, which then kills them. So if we don't get a call about an oiled bird, or if we don't get to the bird fast enough, the bird dies. I'm tired of seeing that. Everywhere I go along the beach, no matter what beach, I have to climb through or over rocks that have tar all over them from the previous oil spills. We don't want that to happen anymore. We don't need any more oil. We don't need any more CO2 from their plants up there on Gaviota. The Bacara Hotel pays more taxes than this unit or any part of it would pay to the county for pulling more oil out of the ground. The Bacara Hotel by itself would pay more taxes than this San Ynez unit. And most fearful is it costs about $1 million to recap every uncapped underwater drilling that's been abandoned. That's a lot of money for the state to pay. If this oil line bursts, it's going to cost the state or somebody even more money, because Sable doesn't have any money or any plans to stop or prevent or fix it. So it's going to be up to us. And another oil spill, it's going to be even worse than the last. We don't want any more of that. Please consider that in making a decision. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comment. Our next speaker is Francine McClintock. After Francine, we'll have Marisa Sullivan. Francine, please make your way to the podium to begin your comment.
Hi, I would appreciate if my testimony could be sworn in. I don't know if that matters. My name is Francine McClintock, and my testimony is based on the book David Bloom's Alcohol Can Be a Gas and some information I've obtained at renewable energy fairs. My interest is in replacing fossil fuel, oil, gasoline, and below ground frack gas and nuclear power by 2030 with energy provided by renewables. Along with solar power, wind energy, geothermal, there is an above ground solar powered marine algae called kelp. And it has been estimated that kelp farming would provide 23 quadrillion BTU per year of methane gas, as well as 90 billion gallons of liquid alcohol fuel per year from the California coast alone. If you add the coast of Oregon, Washington, the Gulf of Mexico, and Chesapeake Bay, you can replace all the transportation fuel for the United States, as well as a large share of the electricity and natural gas. Existing vehicles, oil and gas heaters, generators, tractors, lawnmowers, and even oil refineries can be converted to run on alcohol or methane gas fermented from marine kelp. Existing oil platforms could be converted into kelp distilleries. Kelp farming would help us meet that 2030 deadline. When below ground carbon is brought to the surface and then burned, also known as the fossil fuel model, the old carbon is added to our atmosphere. If an annual above ground plant is grown, it absorbs the carbon. Then if the plant is burned, it releases the carbon. But as long as you regrow the annual plant, it will again absorb the carbon. So using annual above ground plants for energy is carbon neutral and within the natural carbon cycle. Kelp lives in a hydroponic solution, the ocean, and does not need to be watered. Kelp flourishes if grown in dead zones or river outlets, which have high nitrogen levels, growing up to 1 foot a day or more. Kelp replaces the dissolved carbon dioxide with oxygen, which restores the krill, preventing a food web collapse. And kelp also cools the water and slows down hurricanes. So there are many reasons to grow kelp other than for energy. And I want to say that you're not harvesting existing kelp, but you are growing more kelp. kelp farming. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Thank you. Thank you. Our next speaker is Marisa Sullivan. After Marisa, we will have Nancy Avose. Marisa, please make your way to the podium to begin your comment.
Hello, everybody. My name is Marisa Sullivan. I am the former tribal chair for Coastal Band of the Chumash Nation. I'm now considered an elder. I think you can tell by my hair color. I think I can claim that now, and that I turned 65 last Friday.
Happy birthday.
I want to thank you very much for the land acknowledgement. I think it was a really fine one. Thank you. And I also want to thank the commission for the opportunity to submit and listen to people's comments. There's been many years that I was part of many of these kind of meetings pertaining to this specific continued, what I'm going to say, assault on our oceans and our lands. I'm going to keep this as simple as possible, and I understand that it's being considered, the application, the transfer of the leases to restart the San Ynez unit. And here's what my question is, can Sable fulfill the conditions and requirements of the several leases where ExxonMobil, it just doesn't make any sense to me, because how can a company as small as Sable do any better than the promises that were made by ExxonMobil? So my final comment is, no more broken pipelines, no more broken promises. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Our next speaker is Nancy Avose. After Nancy, we will have Linda Phillips. Nancy, please make your way to the podium to begin your comment.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Nancy Avose, and I work with the organization Santa Barbara County Action Network, SBCAN. We are a nonprofit that works countywide, and we promote environmental and social justice. On behalf of SBCAN, we strongly urge the California State Lands Commission to oppose the proposed restart of Exxon's former offshore oil drilling operations on the Gaviota Coast. Let us not repeat past mistakes like the 2015 Refugio disaster, where Santa Barbara Channel saw 450,000 gallons of spilled crude and more than 300 dead animals. We should not expose our wildlife, aquatic life, and residents to irreversible or long-lasting impacts of pollution. To protect the public trust and the well-being of California residents, the California State Lands Commission should continue to look into preventative measures to protect our environment. Enabling oil industry activities will disrupt that promise. In light of increasing risks of climate change, let's look ahead and consider the implications of our actions. The commission should not grant the lease reassignment from Exxon to Sable. I urge you to take the magnitude of public opposition seriously. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Our next speaker is Linda Phillips. Following Linda, we will have Katie Davis. Linda, please make your way to the podium to begin your comment.
Thank you, and thank you very much for being here and hearing us, what we have to say. I'm Dr. Linda Phillips, and I'm speaking today as an individual, but my degrees are in chemistry, and I've been involved in organizations that study, advocate, or plan for emergency preparedness and prevention. I've been a member of the Local Emergency Planning Committee, which, as you may know, is a regional committee in California. And the Pipeline Safety Trust, which is basically an organization from up north, but which operates nationally, and I've been to several of their meetings. So I'm really interested in pipeline safety, and for good reason. I remember very well the 1969 oil spill from a platform. And it essentially, I believe it's what made me such a committed environmentalist. I also remember the oil spill at Refugio, the one that we're talking about here today, and how much those, both of those affected both the ocean and the wildlife in it. And you've heard a lot about all of the environmental effects that these spills had. And I'm particularly concerned by the fact that it was a pipeline which had badly rusted and not been checked well enough to realize that it was badly rusted and needed to be fixed because it was going to spill, because it was going to rupture. And why my fear is that Sable is now wanting to use that pipeline, which we know is so rusted, and wants to put some oil in it again. And this has got to be, number one, the facilities would be have to be repaired. And number two, they would have to make sure that the facilities did not rupture again, did not again cause all the problems that you've been hearing about. And I think basically these pipelines and the platforms need to be shut down for the reasons that people have been very clearly explaining here already.
Thank you.
And I hope you will follow that.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you. Appreciate your testimony today. Next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Katie Davis. Following Katie, we will have Linda Kropp. Katie, please make your way to the podium to begin your comment.
Hello, I'm Katie Davis. I'm chair of the Santa Barbara Ventura chapter of the Sierra Club and vice chair of Sierra Club California. But more importantly, for our purposes here today, I'm a 25-year resident of Goleta. And I was here during the 2015 oil spill. It was the summer. Our beaches were closed. They were covered in hazmat crews. We saw the animals washing up dead or suffering. We don't want to see it again. We don't trust Exxon to restart this offshore platform and the associated infrastructure, let alone a speculative startup. They themselves agree with us. That's why they wanted to, they proposed building a whole new pipeline, trucking the oil. They did not want to restart this pipeline that is corroded and they know presents risks. And only after those solutions proved unworkable did they then finance this startup. You have two items before you that will come up. One is the transfer of the lease. The other one is whether you should give them a new lease at all, because the lease through state waters is expired. So thank you so much for doing a study about whether having brand new leases is in the state interest at all. I think you'll find it is not. I think it's interesting that EDC thinks that should be a consideration with the lease transfers as well. Certainly, Sable doesn't have, they could disappear and be bankrupt in the event of a spill and it would be left on us. So This particular operation, it would involves fracking, it involves long distance horizontal drilling, it involves, even in the best cases, they're dumping polluted wastewater into that ocean. That's incredibly important biodiverse hotspot along the Gaviota Coast, right near a proposed Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary, which we expect to be designated soon. It's a terrible place for offshore drilling. Anywhere in California, you recognize the risk. That's why you haven't approved a new offshore oil lease since the 1969 oil spill. So we urge you, and thank you for hearing from us in person, this rare opportunity to hear from us. And we hope we'll keep this in mind as you make those decisions. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Linda Kropp. Following Linda, unless we have other speakers signed up in person, our next commenter will be Faith Rodriguez. Linda, please make your way to the podium to begin your comment.
Thank you and good afternoon. Welcome to Goleta. I am a resident of Goleta. I'm also the chief counsel with the Environmental Defense Center and want to thank you profusely for coming to Santa Barbara, Goleta, to hear from our local community. And I would like to also acknowledge your staff, led by your executive officer, Jennifer Lucchese, for holding a series of town hall meetings in this very room to talk about issues of local import, such as decommissioning of the Elwood Piers, Platform Holly, Rincon Island. The accessibility of this agency surpasses most, and we really do appreciate it. So I wanted to let you know while you're here in person. So we've heard a lot about the potential restart of oil development in the channel. I want to acknowledge the commission's actions and statements in December when you discussed the study required by state law to look at the potential voluntary relinquishment of leases in state waters, including platform leases, but also authorized proactively a study to analyze the leases in state waters supporting infrastructure such as pipelines and how that might affect public trust resources. And so we are very grateful that these studies are being done. I want to highlight a couple issues related to the end of oil and what happens when, you know, leases are abandoned but not completely cleaned up. Probably the best example is in Santa Barbara County, offshore Summerland. When Chevron removed four platforms in state waters in the mid-1990s, the State Lands Commission required that the platform structures be completely removed, all the debris be removed, and that the site be restored to its natural condition without any obstructions or debris. Chevron didn't do that. And it's about 30 years later, and those huge mounds of debris, hundreds of feet in diameter, 20 to 30 feet high. The core samples taken by the State Lands Commission show very highly toxic chemicals are still embedded there. EDC, on behalf of Get Oil Out, Citizens Planning Association, and Sierra Club, has been working for about 30 years to try to get these cleaned up. That would never happen onshore, but they're on the seabed and out of sight. So we really need to get those cleaned up. That will also set a precedent for upcoming platform decommissioning items that are going to come before the commission, including Platform Holly, which will be the first one. We really want to make sure that decommissioning is done in a way that was contemplated when the leases were initially sold and executed, that the oil companies would remove all of their equipment, all their mess, and restore our oceans as we found them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yes. So I believe that finishes all the speakers that are here in person. Okay. I do just want to make sure before we move to our virtual public speakers to make sure there isn't anybody still in the room that wishes to speak and address the commission. All right. Seeing none, then we can move on to our virtual public commenters.
To the folks that are leaving, we're going to have Jennifer Lucchese is going to be making some general comments about some of the issues that we heard raised in public comment. So if you could stick around till the end of public comment, and I think it'd be very informative.
Of course.
So let's go ahead and pivot, and we'll hear from the folks online.
That's correct. Michelle?
Our first speaker will be Faith Rodriguez. Following Faith will be Izzy Sistek, Faith, please unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Hello, my name is Faith Rodriguez, and I am a watershed science intern of the Wichita Foundation, urging the opposition of lease transfer between Exxon and Sable. Reassigning Exxon leases to Sable to restart operations at the Santa Ynez unit raises significant concerns. It greatly increases the risk of oil spills due to the aging and corroded state of the pipelines, which include the same ones that caused the 2015 Refugio spill, which estimated a near $100 million in cleanup costs. And that's not including restoration or settlement costs or even penalties. These pipelines have not been adequately repaired since then and are even more vulnerable after the additional years of exposure. This makes them a greater liability to the community and the local wildlife. Restarting operations would also reactivate the Los Flores Canyon processing facility, a major source of harmful air pollutants that can create major health problems and jeopardize the safety of the community. The oil platforms and pipelines, some of which are over 40 years old, are well past their average lifespan and are prone to more failures. Additionally, offshore pipelines are famously susceptible to corrosion and damage from environmental factors, but can also be damaged by numerous unprecedented interactions. As it is, leaks are hard to detect and would likely not be tended to until it is too late or the damage caused by them would have already progressed to the point of massive financial cost. This decision also conflicts with the State Lands Commission's goal of protecting California's resources and advancing towards carbon net neutrality by 2045. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Faith. Michelle, is there another speaker?
Our next speaker is Izzy Sistek. Following Izzy, we will have Molly Troop. Izzy, please unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, please proceed.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my comment. My name is Izzy Sistek, and I'm an advocacy chair for UCSB's Environmental Affairs Board. I urge you to deny the lease reassignment from Exxon to Sable. Granting the lease reassignment would facilitate the restart of offshore drilling platforms, the onshore pipeline, which already ruptured and spilled huge amounts of oil in 2015, and onshore processing facilities that are a large source of pollution in Santa Barbara County. The beaches were heavily contaminated by the 2015 Refugio oil spill, and many wildlife populations are still recovering. Before the processing plant shut down, they contaminated the air as Santa Barbara's top greenhouse gas emitters, creating local pollutants that can cause cancer, asthma, and other health issues. Restarting the pipeline risks a new spill on a recovering ecosystem and will make it that much harder for our county and state to meet its climate obligations. I speak on behalf of local college students and many young people when I say that climate change and environmental degradation is at the forefront of our minds. As we look to the future, it's essential that governing bodies preserve the earth so that we can continue to live on a healthy planet. Enabling the sale and restart of this corroded pipeline and ancient oil platforms would facilitate further contamination of the earth's resources, which would harm public health and destroy our one and only home. Reassigning Exxon's lease to Sable would be a massive disservice to the public, which you vowed to protect, and I urge you to consider this issue carefully and to deny this change. Thank you so much for hearing my comment.
Thank you, Izzy. Next speaker.
Our next speaker is Molly Troop. Following Molly, we will have Susan Harvey. Molly, please unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Good afternoon, Chair Cohen and members of the Commission. Thank you for this opportunity to speak here today. My name is Molly Troop, and I'm the Science and Program Manager at Santa Barbara Channel Keeper, a local environmental nonprofit organization with the mission of protecting and restoring the Santa Barbara Channel and its watersheds. We work to ensure clean water, healthy habitats, abundant wildlife, and thriving communities. I'm here today to express our deep concern with the potential future reassignment of several pipeline and infrastructure leases in state waters from ExxonMobil to Sable Offshore Corporation. Channel Keeper supports the State Lands Commission's future decision to decline the reassignment of these leases to Sable Offshore. Channel Keeper was actively involved in the aftermath of the 2015 Plains All-American pipeline spill. We were on the water, in our boat, in the air, and on the beaches. We helped to keep the public informed about the spill. We advocated for policy reforms to ensure disasters like that one couldn't happen again. And we worked with spill response agencies, local governments, and other partners to improve oil spill response and prevention. You have heard at length from the previous speakers today about what is at stake with the ultimate restart of the end-of-life Santa Ynez unit and its associated infrastructure. Thank you for taking this into consideration as you evaluate the lease reassignment later this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Molly. Next speaker.
Our next speaker is Susan Harvey. Following Susan, we will have Eileen Boken. Susan, please unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Thank you. I'm Susan Harvey from the San Lucia chapter of the Sierra Club. Beyond the question of whether it's a good idea to hand over to this particular company the responsibility of aging offshore oil platforms, pipelines, and onshore oil and gas facilities, there is a larger question. Should the State Lands Commission bring the Santa Ynez unit back to life? Should you turn back the clock, pretend the Refugio oil spill never happened, and again consign these waters to offshore drilling because that is something that used to happen there? It's your commission's fundamental duty to protect the public trust. That continuously evolving doctrine provides that tidal and submerged lands are to be held in trust by the state for the benefit of the people of California. In Marx versus Whitney, the court stated that the public trust, the public uses to which tide lands are subject are sufficiently flexible to encompass changing public needs. The harms this pipeline can inflict are a matter of record. The ongoing shutdown of these three oil platforms has prevented the emission of more than 30 million tons of carbon pollution to date. Please acknowledge that public needs have changed, and your duty to act for the benefit of the public, of the people of California, has not. Thank you so much for this opportunity to comment.
Thank you very much, Ms. Eileen Boykin. Boken.
Eileen Boken, Coalition for San Francisco Neighborhoods, speaking on my own behalf. The Coalition has been attending the Bay Conservation and Development Commission meetings on sand mining in San Francisco Bay. The Coalition's interest goes back over 10 years based on a USGS study on how sand mining in San Francisco Bay is exacerbating erosion and accretion on San Francisco's Ocean Beach, accretion on the North Ocean Beach and erosion on South Ocean Beach. As climate change is dynamic, there are concerns that a lease renewal of 10 years will lock in specifics and not provide flexibility. I have proposed a five-year contract with a five-year renewal clause rather than a 10-year renewal contract. I have also stated to BCDC that concrete production is one of the most polluting industries worldwide in terms of greenhouse gas production. Proposals are now being introduced for using building materials such as mass timber rather than concrete. The Coalition for San Francisco Neighborhoods has also provided advised BCDC that it will has urged the Ocean Protection Council to include the waters off San Francisco's Ocean Beach as part of California 30 by 30 initiative marine areas. The Coalition for San Francisco Neighborhoods has also advised BCDC that it is urging the Greater Farallones National Marine Sanctuary to include the waters off San Francisco's Ocean Beach as a non-contiguous area in the sanctuary as part of its management plan review. And finally, the Coalition is urging a cost-benefit analysis of the upcoming sand mining lease renewals, which would analyze the benefits of revenue to the state from those leases versus the environmental cost of addressing coastal erosion and accretion impacts, which are exacerbated by those sand mining activities. Are the renewals of these sand mining leases in the state's best interest to align with the public trust doctrine? Thank you.
Thank you, Miss. Thank you very much. Is there another speaker?
Yes, our next speaker is Janet Rogers. After Janet, we will have Luigi Barassai. Janet, please unmute yourself and begin your comment.
I have a slideshow.
Is there a slideshow with the speaker? Oh, great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I'm Janet Rogers, co-chair of the Embarcadero Coalition. Next slide. The San Diego Port Master Plan is not an amendment. It is a new local coastal plan, and you need to evaluate it for compliance with the public trust doctrine. The public needs state agencies to protect our public access and public assets. This plan eliminates open water views, stated view corridors don't exist, and parks will be eliminated. Next slide. You can't evaluate an incomplete plan. Two major planning districts and one-third of the Embarcadero District Seaport Project were removed. Next slide. There are new bay-wide development standards. How can you ignore this? Next slide. The port uses divide and conquer to avoid a full analysis of the privatization and monetization of public lands and loss of public access. Next slide. The recreation open space designation is combining user fee commercial recreation with free public recreation, which violates the principles of the public trust doctrine. Next slide. Combining parks and plazas with golf courses, restaurants, and yacht clubs is a land and water grab to privatize public assets. ROS eliminates definitions which ensure public access. Next slide. What happened to maximize public access? The port says it can do whatever it wants, which led to a grand jury report, which I've submitted. Next slide. The port will never reach environmental justice goals by monetizing everything. Next slide. What follows is a series of quotes that state agencies and the port should live up to. Trust lands belong to the public and are to be used to promote public rather than exclusively private purposes. The port is building a hotel strip, not a world-class waterfront. Next slide. Public access is more than just physical access to the shoreline, but also includes affordability and visual access. A wall of expensive hotels makes us look like the Vegas Strip. Next slide. The essential trust purpose has always been and remain water-related, and the essential obligation of the state is to manage the tidelands in order to implement and facilitate those trust purposes for all of the people of the state. The Embarcadero is being developed for out-of-state conventions. Next slide. Avoiding new additions to the massive buildings blocking San Diego's waterfront, as well as restoring new views to the shoreline, should be a high priority of the port in the future. All of these quotes came from Diana Lilly at the Coastal Commission in 2014. These obligations have been abandoned by the port. Please don't let this happen. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Is there another speaker?
Yes, our next speaker is Luigi Barassai. Following Luigi will be our last speaker, Judy Birch. Luigi, please unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Can you confirm that I'm unmuted?
You're unmuted. We can
hear
you.
Thank you. My name's Luigi Barassi. I'm an elected board member of the Crockett Community Services District, which is a special district that does sanitation in Crockett. I'm going to switch my camera to give you a view of our wastewater treatment facility, which is on state lands. This lease just recently expired. And just like some of the other speakers have been talking about the public trust doctrine, this is a critical piece of public infrastructure. It's down in an industrial waterfront type of area. Its primary discharger is the CNH sugar refinery. But the town of Crockett also has, a critical need because that's where all of our wastewater is processed. I know this is coming up in a future meeting for the lease renewal on it. And one of the issues that I've been concerned of as an elected official, and by the way, I'm speaking on behalf of my constituents, but not on behalf of the organization that I sit on the board of, is that these improvements be taken into the public trust. The typical lease language requires the demolition of them. Our CNH has traditionally had agreements or requirements that we buy them out in the event that they go out of business. And I feel that now that this asset's been fully amortized and the investments that were made in the 1970s, are complete, that we should no longer be obliged to buy CNH out because they've recovered their investment in the initial plant. And I think this maybe doesn't fit your pattern of how leases typically go, but I think in the case of critical public infrastructure, it is important and desirable to take those into the public estate upon lease expiration. So anyhow, thank you very much. And that concludes my commentary.
Thank you, Luigi. Are there any other members of the public that'd like to comment that are online?
Our last speaker is Judy Birch. After Judy, we have no hands raised for comment. Judy, please unmute yourself to begin your comment.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, we can.
Unmute myself.
We can start the video.
I unmuted myself. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. I don't have much to add to other than to say that I agree with all that has been said against approving of this eventually. I wanted to say that I'm really sick and tired of refighting this climate endangering industry, the risk of spills, the greenhouse gases polluting the air, when we know this is against our country's our county's settled goals to improve the climate. And about the travel industry, remember, that is an economic issue. If our beautiful place gets ruined, then that affects our economy too, not to mention that I like our environment. That's why I moved here from Redondo Beach. And I don't want to see it ruined. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Any last minute public comment speakers?
No hands are raised for comment at this time.
Great. Thank you very much, Michelle. Appreciate your help on this. So this concludes our first public comment period. And at this time, I heard some things in public comment that were raised that I'd like to give Ms. Lucchese an opportunity to speak to.
Yeah, certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. What I will do is give a status update on the applications from Exxon and Sable for the lease assignments.
Thank you.
As well as give some status updates on other initiatives that the Commission is working on relating to offshore oil and gas that I think would be of interest to the people who have spoke so far. So first, we are currently processing 4 applications from ExxonMobil to assign the 4 leases to Sable Corporation. These leases include the Elwood Pier, 2 mooring buoys, and 2 pipeline leases that connect the San Ynez unit to shore through state waters. We are still processing and analyzing that information that's been submitted within the parameters of state law, and specifically Public Resources Code 6804. We do not have a meeting date identified at this time where we will bring those applications to the Commission for their consideration. What we will do is continue to update the Commission on the status of those lease applications at our each of our future meetings. We have a meeting scheduled in October and then another one in December. In terms of restarting the San Ynez unit, the Commission took action last year that put a whole host of comprehensive inspection and survey requirements on ExxonMobil above and beyond any state or federal regulatory authorities have done to evaluate the integrity of those pipelines before Exxon can restart the San Ynez unit. Our team of inspectors and engineers and analysts are reviewing all of those surveys and inspections as they are being conducted, both in terms of the proposed methodology and the implementation of those inspections, and of course the survey results and inspection results when they come into us. So that is an ongoing process that we are currently involved in. In addition to that, we are keeping very close, in close coordination and communication with state and federal regulators that also have jurisdiction over those pipelines, including the state fire marshal and PHMSA and BSEE of the federal government. So this is a very high priority for the State Lands Commission and its staff, and we are doing our due diligence across the board when it comes to the Santa Ynez unit and the pipelines associated with that. We are always available to meet with interested stakeholders to talk about our progress and our updates, so please don't hesitate to reach out to us as staff. A couple of other things I just wanted to mention. This was, I think, Ms. Kropp had referenced some of the studies that we are currently embarking on. One is under a bill that we refer to as AB 2257, and this was passed into law effective last year, and it requires the State Lands Commission to do a cost study among looking at other aspects of what it would look like for the state to engage in negotiations with our existing offshore oil and gas production lessees. We have 12 leases still in production offshore to terminate those leases early. And so we are doing that cost study now with the goal of bringing that cost study to the State Lands Commission for their consideration at the end of this year. So please stay on the lookout for that agenda item. We are also just issued our solicitation to retain a consultant to help us do a study looking at all of our offshore oil and gas pipeline leases, both that connect state platforms to shore as well as federal platforms to shore. We have a handful of those, and we are doing a comprehensive study at the impacts of those pipelines on public trust resources and the marine environment under the specific direction of the State Lands Commission last December. So that solicitation is out. We will be vetting consultants to help us do that with the goal of developing that study and presenting it to the commission by December 2026. As part of that, there will be plenty of opportunity for public comment and engagement, as well as public comment on the draft study that we will issue in the next coming years. As part of that direction and action by the commission last year as well, they put a moratorium on the State Lands Commission staff from accepting applications for any new leases for existing offshore oil and gas pipelines. So we are not accepting those applications or processing those applications for those existing pipelines at this time until the study is done. So that can be, the study can inform the commission on the future of leasing tidelands for offshore pipelines. Anything else that I may have missed?
Well, let me,
Madam Chair, Commissioner,
the Lieutenant Governor, see if there's any comments from her.
Well, so public comment is not, does not make an action item or an item or a discussion item. It just seemed to me that since we're here in Goleta, and I think that's I appreciate that you asked Ms. Lucchese to give a little bit of information, because so many people came down here to be here in person to talk about this issue. And it is really, really important in this public process that we do hear from the public and the people who are most affected by these decisions. I'll just, one thing I did hear that I hadn't heard about that I would just ask that maybe you can see if you can find. One of the people who spoke mentioned that Santa Barbara had done an environmental impact report that evaluated the pipeline itself, the one within our jurisdiction. Can you see if you can find that? Because I have not heard of an EIR that evaluated, again, not the pipeline when it hits the shore per se, but underwater, the submerged portion.
Certainly. I had not heard that before, and I'm not aware of that. So we will look into that.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So this concludes our first public comment period. And the next item of business will be the adoption of the minutes from the commission's meeting, which was held June 7th, 2024.
May I have a motion to approve the minutes, or is there any discussion? No discussion? Seeing none? All right, let's go ahead and approve the mission.
Madam Chair, because we have Commissioner Peralt virtually, we have to do a roll call vote.
Okay, no problem. May I have a motion?
So moved.
Okay, a motion moved by Commissioner Kunalakis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Peralt. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Certainly. Commissioner Kunalakis.
Aye.
Commissioner Peralt.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously.
All right. Thank you very much. The next order of business is the executive officer's report. Ms. Lucchese, may we have that report?
Certainly. First, during this report, I actually want to turn it over to our lead scientist, Katie Robinson-Phillip. She's participating virtually, but will be giving a status update to the commission on the Tijuana River pollution crisis. Katie?
Thank you. Hello, and thank you, Chair Cohen and commissioners. My name is Katie Robinson-Phillip, and I'm a senior environmental scientist with the Climate Adaptation and Special Initiatives team. Today, I will provide a brief update on the transboundary pollution crisis in the Tijuana River Valley. Additionally, I will highlight potential opportunities staff are evaluating for the commission to pursue to help support efforts to end the crisis that is so adversely affecting our communities and environment. And there should be a slide presentation. Is that able to be pulled up?
We're getting it. Give us 1 minute.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Next slide, please. For those not familiar with the Tijuana River Valley region, the Tijuana River Valley is a natural floodplain with tidally flushed wetland and riparian areas that supports threatened and endangered species and includes several federally listed historical and archaeological sites. Nearly three quarters of the Tijuana River watershed is in Mexico, but it drains into the Pacific Ocean through the 8-square-mile Tijuana River Valley north of the border in Imperial Beach. Next slide, please. The commission has jurisdiction over tide and submerged land located in and near the Tijuana River watershed. Currently, the commission leases tide and submerged land of the Tijuana River estuary to the California Department of Parks and Recreation for the Border Field State Park and to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for the Tijuana River National Estuarine Research Reserve. The City of San Diego and the U.S. section of the International Boundary and Water Commission lease tide and submerged land in the Pacific Ocean for an outfall associated with the South Bay International Wastewater Treatment Plant. Next slide, please. Due to urban development, industrial activity, and inadequate storm and wastewater treatment infrastructure, the region experiences frequent transboundary flows, carrying sediment, trash, contaminated wastewater, and untreated sewage through the river and into the ocean, adversely impacting water quality in the region and along the coast. Transboundary flows are exacerbated during large storm events, such as heavy precipitation and runoff, the burden in already overstressed infrastructure. Next slide, please. These transboundary flows significantly impact the nearby coastal communities and habitats. The main beach in Imperial Beach has been closed for much of the past 3 years due to excessive and unsafe levels of bacteria from untreated sewage flows, which pose a health risk to the public. As California experiences record high temperatures this summer, not being able to access the coast to find relief from inland heat is an additional consequence. Residents are also severely impacted by the effects of transboundary flows, reporting gastrointestinal and respiratory illnesses due to poor air and water quality. San Diego County recently approved funds to purchase air purifiers for residents who live in the region due to the noxious odors caused by the flows. It is a critical environmental justice issue that is physically and mentally affecting communities. Additionally, beach closures and noxious odors have economic consequences due to decreased recreation and tourism. Sensitive and critically important habitats are also at risk of degradation due to a constant influx of pollutants and contaminants. Next slide, please. In 2023, more than 44 billion gallons of contaminated water and raw sewage flowed across the U.S.-Mexico border into San Diego County. As of June of this year, the International Boundary and Water Commission has recorded 33.55 billion gallons of polluted flows, flows that make their way through the Tijuana River Valley and into the Pacific Ocean, wreaking disastrous consequences on the environment and our communities. This map outlines the existing storm and wastewater treatment infrastructure within the Tijuana River Valley. Many of the pump stations, collectors, and treatment stations are either in disrepair due to lack of proper management over previous decades and continued exposure to heavy overflows, or they simply do not have the capacity to process the transboundary flows, especially during wet seasons. You'll notice that this system of infrastructure spans across the border, emphasizing the complexity and scale of the issue as one of binational importance. Click, please. I want to highlight some of the current work that is in progress to improve and repair infrastructure intended to treat and process these flows. On the U.S. side, the International Boundary and Water Commission is working on repairing and expanding the South Bay International Treatment Plant, which is highlighted by the red box. The facility has not been properly maintained for decades and is currently non-compliant with its National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit. The International Boundary and Water Commission is coordinating with the San Diego Water Board on the terms of compliance. The deadline to reach compliance was August 15th of this year. However, on June 3rd, 2024, the International Boundary and Water Commission requested that the deadline be extended to September 30th of this year. On July 9th, 2024, the San Diego Water Board responded to the request, explaining that they would not extend the compliance deadline. The San Diego Water Board continues to monitor the status of compliance, and at its August 14th, 2024 board meeting, the board received additional informational update from IBWC on the status of repairs and the current challenges that they're facing, but presented an estimated timeline for compliance in September of 2024. The board is monitoring the situation and may determine appropriate next steps for enforcement, and we anticipate an update at the next board meeting, which is on September 11th, 2024. Additionally, in June 2024, a malfunction within a surge tank of the Hollister pump station, which pumps transboundary flows from Goat Canyon to Smuggler's Gulch to the South Bay plant, led to hundreds of thousands of gallons of wastewater to spill into Hollister Street. While work is ongoing to repair malfunctions and bring Hollister back online, the IBWC is also working on plans to expand the South Bay facility. Recently, on August 21st, 2024, they awarded a construction contract for the rehabilitation and expansion of the South Bay International Treatment Plan. The completed expansion will likely take between 3 and 5 years, though this timeframe could be extended depending on funding and any issues that could come up. Click, please. On the Mexico side, the San Antonio de los Buenos plant is undergoing construction. It is currently non-functional and has been discharging 40 million gallons of wastewater per day into the Pacific Ocean. Mexican officials expect that the facility will be online by the end of September or early October. While this will mark a major improvement in the region towards improving water quality in the ocean south of the border, as the facility will treat 25 million gallons of wastewater per day, from Tijuana into the Pacific, it will not treat the current diverted Tijuana River flows. Click, please. Mexico is also working on rehabilitating an international collector pipeline, which is intended to transport wastewater to the South Bay facility, but due to many fractures and leaks, contributes to the polluted flows that are flowing into Tijuana River. Unfortunately, when construction is in progress, the Mexican pump station is shut down, and an extra tens of millions of gallons of wastewater flows into the South Bay facility or into the Tijuana River channel. Construction is expected to wrap up this summer, which will hopefully address some of these flows. However, there is an issue of ongoing excess sediment flows of unknown origin, and the IBWC is coordinating with Mexican officials to determine the source and further to determine how to address these excess flows. Next slide, please. The Commission has been actively calling attention to the crisis and advocating for action. The Commission and its staff have provided comments on the environmental review of infrastructure projects, advocated and supported legislation to direct funding and resources towards addressing the crisis, and in April 2022 was part of a coalition of government agencies and clean water advocates involved in reaching a settlement with the IBWC on cross-border water pollution in Tijuana River Valley. Staff are committed to identifying opportunities where the Commission can further support and bolster efforts to bring relief to the impacted communities and finally solve this crisis. Currently, staff are developing a new webpage for the Commission's website to help promote public awareness for the transboundary pollution crisis in the Tijuana River Valley. This webpage will help summarize different activities and progress at the federal, state, regional, and local level, and will direct members of the public to the appropriate sources for more information. Commission staff are also engaging with regional and local partners to identify how the Commission may best support them as they navigate delays with federal permitting to deploy mitigation projects in the Tijuana River, planning and mitigation and restoration efforts, and on helping to identify needs for funding to support regional efforts as well. Staff will also continue to seek opportunities to elevate the need for more funding. Solving this crisis requires a holistic approach. As was recognized in the US EPA and IBWC report of decision for their programmatic environmental impact statement for projects to improve infrastructure, Congress has currently allocated about $400 million towards the South Bay facilities repair and expansion, but an estimated minimum $200 million is still needed. The other projects in the record of decision are not currently funded, and some will need additional environmental review, which are critical to addressing the current scale of transboundary flows. Additionally, staff continue to track legislation at the state and federal level that may help to provide additional funding or services to address the crisis. Next slide, please. The situation in the Tijuana River Valley is dire. Communities are suffering from health problems due to poor air and water quality. People cannot play, swim, or recreate in the affected coastal waters. And sensitive habitats, home to a diverse array of plant and animal species, are under constant pressure of pollutants and contaminants. Much work is needed to address this crisis, and staff will continue to identify ways to support and elevate action. The Commission remains engaged in the issue, and staff look forward to providing a more in-depth presentation during the October 2024 Commission meeting. Next slide, please. Thank you again. This concludes my update on the transboundary pollution crisis in Tijuana River Valley as part of the executive officer's update. We are happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We have one question for you from the Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Katie, could you go back to your first slide, the map? I think it was your first slide.
We need someone in
Billy's
this room.
On it. He's working on it.
Thank you. So I believe that should be slide.
Hold on.
Six.
We'll get there.
Oh, is it? Sorry. No, next one. Okay, you had a lot of maps. The one that showed all the location of the facilities.
On slide six.
Yes, thank you. There we go. So the international treatment plant that is currently operating over capacity because of failure of one of the major pumps, that is where the current work is being done that's already begun?
So at the international treatment plant, they have been doing some remediation work to clean up the tanks. There's a lot of overgrowth in the sediment tanks, and so they are working on bringing some of those components back online. And the IBWC has also been working on obtaining spare parts. One of the major issues with the plant is that once something breaks down, they have to wait months, if not longer, in order for the spare repair parts to come in and be developed. And so they are currently working on having a backstock of these repair elements so that they can expedite repairs when necessary. Some of the work that is currently going on, just to mention though, what has happened is IBWC has recently awarded the construction contract. And so the design elements will begin, and they expect some early.
Can you be a little more, the construction contract for exactly what?
To expand and rehabilitate the international treatment plant.
Okay. And is that going to use up the entire $400 million budget?
Eventually. So they will be doing a phased approach to the repair and expansion. And the complete estimates are around $600 to $900 million, and they currently have $400 million. So there will be more funding that is needed to fully implement the construction plans. Yes.
Of the international treatment plan.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the current state of the work, has the design been completed?
So they've just awarded the contract, and so my understanding is that they will be working with the contractors.
Design contract or construction contracts?
It's a mix of both, so they'll be working on the first phases of the design and construction.
Okay, and what is the critical path then to get those improvements, at least the first amount that's been funded so far, to get that completed? And how will the capacity change between where it is today, and what are the markers where capacity will grow? For instance, will they bring the failed pump station back online quickly, early enough to deal with flows from this winter? Like, what are we anticipating in terms of improvements coming in that will address the flows in these coming months/years?
Yes, so currently they are working on bringing the Hollister pump back online, which will help with some of the current flows. That is part of kind of the ongoing repair process.
Do you have a time for when they believe that that pump will be brought back online?
Estimated end of September was the last that I heard during an IBWC update, and we're continuing to track that, to track the status of the repairs and the ordered parts that they have in place.
And then the larger construction project to add capacity, when do we anticipate that will be up and running?
The most recent update that I've read is that they anticipate early construction to begin this year. I'm not sure what the phased approach means in terms of capacity to manage the flows, but I'm happy to look at that and to see if we can request additional information so that we can have a more detailed understanding of how will the capacity shift as they move through this phased development approach.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to add that this presentation is a precursor of a much more robust and comprehensive presentation that we will be agendizing for our October 17th meeting, because we're going to be in San Diego for that meeting, and we will be inviting representatives of the treatment plant as well as other entities that have a very significant role in addressing this.
All right, thank you. Ms. Lucchese, does that conclude your portion of the agenda?
I just have two things mention in addition to the Tijuana update. One is on the legislative front. Our staff, pursuant to direction from the commission, has been advocating for SB 1053 and AB 2236, identical bills that would reduce the plastic pollution crisis by banning plastic bags from being provided at grocery stores. This follows the commission's vote in June to support these bills. And earlier this week, our staff participated in a press conference with the bill authors, grocers, Surfrider Foundation, Oceana, and many others calling for the passage of both bills. We know these are important bills for California and for the Commission, and we appreciate the opportunity to show our support on behalf of the Commission. And more information about the bills and legislation that we're tracking this year is located on Agenda Item 69. And then finally, I wanted to make the announcement that we have hired a new assistant executive officer, Grace Cotto, and I hope that you'll help me congratulate her on being the new assistant executive officer for the State Lands Commission. I have worked with Grace for almost 25 years, and we can't think of a more qualified person to take on the critical and expansive responsibilities of the assistant executive officer. Grace has led many initiatives and programs on behalf of the entire commission of statewide significance, and she is an incredible leader. She exemplifies all the attributes of a great leader. She's smart, thoughtful, has deep experience and expertise, and is fundamentally an extremely hard worker and team player. But most importantly, she is a kind and empathetic leader that has the true respect of not only our entire staff, but of all the people, all the members of the public that she works with. And she is knows exactly how to prioritize the commission's mission and values, as well as prioritizing our staff and ensuring they have the resources they need to do the important work on behalf of the commission. Grace will be taking over for Colin Connor, who is will be retiring at the end of this year, and we will be instituting a mentoring and training program to get Grace up to speed. And while you don't see her right now, she is running the show behind the scenes on Zoom right now. And I look forward to everybody in this room and watching on Zoom to get to know her and her to work with the commissioners to achieve our goals. So thank you with that. That concludes my report.
Well, thank you very much. Let me see if there's any public comment. Commissioner Peralt, do you have any questions for the executive director?
No questions, but just offering up a congratulations to Grace. We look forward to working with her more closely.
That's great. Thank you. Congratulations to you, Grace, from us up here on the DS. Michelle, do we have any public comment from anyone online?
We have no hands raised for comment at this time.
All right. All right. Well, then the next order of business will be the adoption of the consent calendar. Commissioners, are there any items that you'd like to remove from the consent calendar? All right, I'm seeing heads being shaking no. Next, I'd like to call on Ms. Lucchese to indicate which items, if any, have been removed from the consent calendar.
Yes, consent items 39, 65, and 66 are removed from the agenda and will be considered at a later time.
And the regular items?
Those are all staying on.
Okay, all right, thank you. May I have a motion to adopt the consent agenda and a second?
So moved.
All right. Motion moved by Commissioner Kunalakis. Is there a second?
Second.
A second by Commissioner Peralt. Could we please call the roll?
Certainly. Commissioner Kunalakis.
Aye.
Commissioner Peralt.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. Next order of business will be the regular calendar.
Yes, thank you. Item 71 is our a presentation and consideration of action relating to the Rincon decommissioning projects, EIR and project consideration. Nicole Dabrowski is our chief of our environmental plannings and science management division. She'll be giving staff's presentation.
All right, Mr. Dabrowski, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to your presentation. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Commissioners. My name is Nicole Dabrowski, and I'm Chief of the Commission's Division of Environmental Science Planning and Management. I'm presenting today on the Rincon Phase 2 decommissioning project. Staff recently completed a final environmental impact report, or known as an EIR, for the project. We are bringing it to the Commission for certification today. We're also proposing that the Commission approve certain components of the project that are analyzed in the final EIR, and the Commission adopt findings and a mitigation monitoring program for the approved project.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Item 71. While they bring that up, can you go to slide two, Billy, when you bring it up?
What's that?
Slide two, when you bring it up. Rincon Island was constructed in 1959, approximately 3,000 feet offshore of Punta Gorda in Ventura County, and along with the onshore facility used for oil and gas production. These parcels were most recently leased by the Commission to Rincon Island Limited Partnership, or RILP, until they filed for bankruptcy in 2016 and quit-claimed their leases back to the Commission in 2017. RILP failed to plug and abandon the oil wells and decommission the facilities associated with these leases, requiring the state of California to pursue decommissioning. This slide shows the project locations and identifies the project components that are analyzed in the EIR, including Rincon Island, the causeway connecting Rincon Island to shore, a 6-acre onshore facility down coast and approximately 1.3 miles to the east of Rincon Island off of Pacific Coast Highway, onshore pipeline connections that once connected Rincon Island to the onshore facility, and a State Coastal Conservancy, or SCC, parcel located adjacent to the causeway abutment in Muscle Shoals. The SCC parcel was not associated with the oil and gas production operations, but was included in the EIR at the request of the State Coastal Conservancy. Due to its proximity to the Rincon facilities and the potential to protect and enhance public trust resources at this site, Coastal Conservancy and Commission staff have discussed a potential transfer of jurisdiction of the parcel from the Conservancy to the Commission, but no such transfer has yet been authorized. Because the Commission does not currently have jurisdiction over the SCC parcel, Commission staff do not recommend that the Commission approve the SCC parcel component of the project at this time. Next slide, please. The three phases of the Rincon planning and decommissioning project are shown on this slide. Phase one of the Rincon decommissioning included the plugging and abandonment of all oil and gas wells and removal of surface equipment at Rincon Island, the onshore facility, and the adjacent privately owned Coast Ranch parcel, which was completed in June of 2021. Phase two of the Rincon decommissioning effort, our current phase, included development of a feasibility study, followed by preparation of the EIR in accordance with CEQA. We are now at the end of the phase two, which will conclude with certification of the EIR and commission approval of the decommissioning project. Phase three will consist of securing funding and implementation of the decommissioning project approved by the commission. Next slide, please. The next few slides show the current condition of the sites evaluated in the EIR. This slide shows Rincon Island in its current condition. As you can see, a few structures remain on the island. There is also a wharf attached to the island, which allows access by boat. The island is currently under caretaker status, which includes daily monitoring. Next slide, please. The picture on the left on this slide is of the onshore facility, which after phase one is clear of all surface structures. The picture on the right is the vault box that is the access point for the onshore pipeline connections that previously connected Rincon Island to the onshore facility. Those pipelines previously ran along the causeway, but that portion of the line was removed during phase one. The pipelines now run from the causeway abutment under Ocean Avenue along under Highway 1 and the Union Pacific Railroad crossing to the vault box. Next slide, please. This is a picture of the SCC parcel adjacent to the causeway abutment in Muscle Shoals. As I mentioned earlier, this parcel was not part of the Rincon oil and gas development operations, but it was included in the EIR pursuant to Conservancy's request. Next slide, please. This flowchart outlines the phase two planning decision process. The box outlined in red indicates where we are now in the process, which is the Commission's consideration of the EIR for certification and of a project for approval. Commission staff have engaged with the public, tribes, and government agencies throughout the phase two process. Next slide, please. The feasibility study that kicked off phase two was finalized in July of 2022 after a 60-day public comment period on the draft study. At its August 23, 2022 meeting, the Commission considered the feasibility findings, study findings, and authorized staff to proceed with preparation of the EIR and approved staff's recommendation for the proposed project to be analyzed in the EIR. Next slide, please. When the Commission considered the feasibility study at its August 2022 meeting, the Commission authorized staff to exclude complete removal of the island from further analysis as an alternative in the EIR due to the infeasibility of completely removing the island. Next slide, please. Additionally, this project analyzed in the EIR does not include analysis of any reuse proposals for Rincon Island or the onshore facility. Some parties have expressed interest in leasing one or more of these sites for public trust consistent uses, but the commission has not yet received any applications for reuse. Any application for reuse would be subject to additional review under CEQA. Next slide, please. Although the EIR does not include any analysis of reuse proposals, in item 72, so the next item on today's agenda, staff has requested authorization to enter into a memorandum of intent with the Coastal Band of the Chumash Nation to explore opportunities for co-management of Rincon Island and the onshore facility. Next slide, please. I'd like to focus now on the CEQA process and the development of the EIR for the Phase 2 Rincon decommissioning project. This slide shows the CEQA process, beginning with the notice of preparation and public scoping, followed by public review of the draft EIR. Publication of the final EIR and now commission consideration of the documents for certification. I'd like to say how appreciative staff has been of the ongoing public, tribal, and agency participation, which has been instrumental in guiding development of the final document. Next slide. The proposed project, as evaluated in the EIR, includes retention of the causeway in its current configuration, removal of remnant buildings on the island, and remediation of the contaminated soil in the island core. The onshore pipelines that currently run from the end of the causeway to the vault box would be removed and cleaned and grouted and abandoned in place, and the hydrocarbon contamination on the onshore facility would be remediated through one of five options. The parcel owned by the Coastal Conservancy is included in the EIR project description. Three potential options to modify the parcel were considered that include some upgrades to both the upland vegetation, public use and access, and potential shoreline protection. Next slide. As required by CEQA, the EIR assessed the potential for the proposed project to cause environmental impacts to a wide variety of resource areas. This slide lists those key elements that were analyzed in the EIR as required by CEQA, and additional considerations not required by CEQA, but that commission staff consider critical to a comprehensive review of a project, including climate change, fishing, and environmental justice. Next slide. Mitigation measures were incorporated into the EIR to reduce all potential impacts to a less than a significant level. Next slide. The feasibility study and comments received during its preparation guided staff in the development of the proposed project and alternatives to be included in the draft EIR. Alternatives are generally designed to further reduce potential impacts as compared to the proposed project. However, because the feasibility study was used to screen out infeasible alternatives, the proposed project actually resulted in the fewest impacts compared to the alternatives remaining for consideration in the EIR. Staff also examined a no project alternative as required by CEQA, which would include leaving all components of their current state without remediation or decommissioning. Next slide, please. Due to comments received during the feasibility study and in response to the notice of preparation, a number of new studies were undertaken to support the environmental analysis in the EIR. Staff and the commission's environmental consultant looked at various causeway alternatives and the potential impacts that could occur if the causeway were to be changed or removed. Additional studies examined coastal processes and nearshore sediment transport, the impact of the causeway on the Little Rincon surf break, the marine biological diversity on the causeway pilings, and bird nesting and roosting activity on Rincon Island and the causeway. Next slide. The draft EIR was available for a 60-day public comment period from March 15th to May 15th of this year. A public meeting was held on May 2nd to receive oral comments. 22 agencies, groups, organizations, and individuals provided written comments on the draft EIR, and 9 individuals provided oral comment at the public meeting. Part 2 of the final EIR presents all of the written and oral comments received and the responses from staff. Changes were made in the final EIR in response to these comments and are identified by underline or strikeout in the document. Next slide. Agencies and organizations that commented on the draft EIR are listed on this slide. Commission staff worked closely with Coastal Commission and the Coastal Conservancy as part of a joint review panel for preparation of the EIR. The final EIR was published on July 16th of this year. Next slide. I will now move to discuss the decommissioning project that staff requests that the Commission consider for approval today. That project consists of removal of Rincon Island surface facilities and remediation of contaminated soils within the island core, decommissioning of the onshore facility using option 2, which would include excavation of contaminated soils, pumping and treatment of groundwater, and backfill with clean fill, subject to approval of a remedial action plan by the water boards, and decommissioning of the onshore pipeline connections, subject to reaching an agreement with the County of Ventura regarding project execution details and costs. As previously discussed, staff do not recommend that the Commission include the SCC parcel in the project at this time, as the Commission does not have jurisdiction of that parcel. Next slide, please. The project is estimated to cost anywhere between $10 to $15 million, depending on which option is chosen for remediation of the onshore facility. Estimated costs for remediation of the onshore facility alone range from $450,000 to over $4 million, depending on which option is approved in consultation with the Regional Water Quality Control Board and the State Water Resources Control Board. Note that all options would require installation of a sheet pile barrier wall to isolate the onshore facility from the adjacent Coast Ranch parcel. Next slide. Staff recommends option 2 for the onshore facility remediation, which is estimated to cost $2.7 million. The Water Board staff have indicated that option 2 would likely be approved. Thus, the total estimated cost of the project, including remediation and decommissioning of Rincon Island, the onshore facility, and the onshore pipeline connections, is $13.9 million. Next slide. Depending on the project and the options approved by the Commission, many agency approvals will be required to proceed with decommissioning once funding is obtained. Next slide. So at this time, staff recommends the following Commission actions. 1, certify the environmental impact report. 2, subject to available funding, authorize implementation of the Rincon Island surface facilities removal and remediation of soils in the island core. Decommissioning of the onshore facility using option 2, and decommissioning of the onshore pipeline connections components of the proposed project as presented in the staff report for item 71. And for the approved project, adopt the mitigation monitoring program as presented in Exhibit A and the CEQA findings as presented in Exhibit B. Next slide. This concludes staff's presentation. We're available for questions, and the Commission's environmental consultant, Padre Associates, is also available to address technical questions.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for that presentation. I wanted to share that I really think this is a very exciting time. I had an opportunity to tour the site this morning, and I had a chance to tour the Rincon Island with Tribal Chair Gabriel Frosto, who's in the chamber with us today. And I love the feel of it, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, it was foggy, it was a thick, heavy fog, but it was still very still, and it was peaceful, and it just felt like a very historic place. And this is a good place that we're in to be making the types of changes, remediation, agreements that we're putting into place. It just feels like the right thing to do, and on so many different levels. I also wanted to acknowledge that I had a chance to review the feasibility study that this commission approved in 2022. And I noticed that the reuse option offered in the EIR before us today is approximately $1 million less than anticipated. For the feasibility study estimated the reuse option to be around $15 million. So that's a good thing in this tight budget climate. And that I also noticed that the proposal before us today is estimated at $14 million. So I just want to acknowledge how much I appreciate the staff's attention here to just be responsible to taxpayer dollars. And it is just exhilarating to envision the future transformation that we expect here from a former oil and gas operation to a place that will inspire and educate generations to come. Not only the generations of children of the Chumash Nation, but also everyone in the surrounding area. And I'm really excited about that. I think about that particularly as a mother of a little one. And I know the Lieutenant Governor also has children, as does Commissioner Peralt. And so we often look at a lot of the decisions that we look, the lens that we look through from the lens of a mother, of beings that have given life, that have birthed life into the world, that have raised it. And so this part of our work is more than just policy. This is a healing process of healing the earth that has given so much to all of us. And so I really look forward to observing the process, being a part of the process for the next several years as we work towards the restoration and the reuse of this historic site. And I want to really acknowledge the historic nature of the Coast Stewardship Agreement that we will further discuss next, but this agreement I'm hoping will be the model of future agreements on the way the state of California continues to conduct business, and hopefully it will inspire our federal partners to also come to the table and be good stewards and in partnership with us. Lieutenant Governor, I know you have something to say.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you to staff for organizing it for the chair this morning and for myself yesterday afternoon to go out to visit Rincon Island and see how much progress has already been made. We have come a long way from those early days of the bankruptcy to today, where we are well on our way to turning this into whatever it's going to be in the future. And being out there, it was just really remarkable. You know, there are a few structures left. There's more work to be done. We saw that there are some choices to be made of exactly how we're going to move forward. But I know that we're in great hands with the staff to continue to finalize this process. And I also just want to recognize how much public engagement there has been in this by this community to make sure that this is all handled appropriately. And again, we're in some ways getting to the end of one part of the process, but at the beginning of another. So thank you.
Absolutely. Commissioner Peralt, is there any comment that you wanted to share?
Just really quickly, I apologize I couldn't be there in person to also be able to take the tour, but it sounds like it was a remarkable opportunity. I will just say as a representative for finance that sits across some of these multiple boards, one of them being the Coastal Conservancy. I just want to echo the chair's comments about the ability to continue to collaborate across state entities where it makes sense, and when we can work together to be more efficient and collaborative in the use of some of our lands. I also would just like to acknowledge and just state that I know it's part of the next item, not necessarily specific to this, but I am excited to continue to talk about what the reuse looks like and how that partnership with some of our tribal friends will be able to continue. So I think we are trying to make sure we're engaging not just general public, but obviously our tribal partners in many different aspects throughout the state. And I think this is another exciting opportunity for us to continue that dialogue and work together to provide an opportunity for them. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Peralt. Let's go ahead and pivot to public comment. Hear what our other stakeholders have to say. Any members of the public that would like to comment on this item, please come up to the microphone. Anyone online, please raise your hand.
Yes, our first speaker on this item is Samuel Cohen. Sam, please unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Good afternoon, I'm Sam Cohen. I'm the Government Affairs and Legal Officer for the Santee Nez Band of Chumash Indians. I just want to, I'm very happy that you're certifying your EIR. This is a beautiful area. It's beautiful now, and you should expect that it was beautiful to the Chumash people hundreds of years ago. And there's quite a history of occupation, At least two Chumash villages were found within 100 feet, according to the Padre report. Normally, we would investigate between the two villages because that's just obvious. But Padre makes a finding that there's no cultural resources on the site, which I find offensive. But they do make the right findings that they ask for on-site Native American monitors and inadvertent discovery provisions. So with those mitigation measures, I can support the certification of the EIR. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments, Sam. Good to see you. Are there any other members of the public that would like to comment on this item?
We have no hands raised for comment at this time.
All right. Thank you very much. May I have a motion to adopt staff's recommendation as well as a second?
So moved.
All right. Motion made by Commissioner Kounalakis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Peralta. Can we take a roll call vote?
Certainly. Commissioner Kounalakis.
Aye.
Commissioner Peralta.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously.
All right. Thank you. Next item is item 72. This item is to consider authorizing the executive officer to enter into a memorandum of intent with the coastal band of the Chumash Nation. We may have the staff presentation now.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Commissioners. My name is Jessica Ramirez, and I serve as the Commission's Environmental Justice and Tribal Liaison. It is my honor to present on this item. We are thrilled to memorialize the intent of the Commission and the Coastal Band of the Chumash Nation to collaborate on developing a co-management agreement for the stewardship of Rincon Island in the onshore facility. Staff have met with the Coastal Band on several occasions, and the tribe has expressed its deep connection to the coast and its vision for the reuse of this site. This MOI is intended to demonstrate the commitment between the Commission and the Coastal Band to work in partnership on developing a framework for co-management of the site once phase three of the decommissioning and remediation occurs. This is a first of its kind commitment the Commission enters into, and we are excited to continue exploring this opportunity alongside the Coastal Band. This action furthers the Commission's commitment to empower tribal stewardship, and it aligns with Executive Order N-1519, which is Governor Newsom's apology on behalf of the citizens of California to all California Native Americans for the historical wrongs inflicted upon them. It also reaffirms the state's commitment to engage in government-to-government consultation and Executive Order N-8220, which, among other things, establishes a state goal to conserve at least 30% of California's land and coastal waters by 2030. With us today, as mentioned previously, Gabriel Frausto, chair of the Coastal Band of the Chumash Nation, is with us, and he will now address the commission on the importance of this memorandum of intent.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Chairwoman, Commissioner. My name is Gabriel Frausto, and I'm the tribal chair of the Coastal Band of the Chumash Nation. Having an opportunity to access our sacred lands supports the efforts of a continual cultural revitalization that restores our historical practices and reinforces our tribal sustainability and sovereignty. It is an honor to continue to work with the state and local agencies on this endeavor, creating a model for community for future generations. I know we all have children. We want to see our children well. We want to work together. We're not just the Coastal Band. We're a part of a larger community now. And we're so grateful to be here with you. We're so grateful to be a part of this narrative that is a part of the healing and a part of the bridge building that brings communities together as we work together to be a larger family, a larger relationship that reaches out beyond the boundaries of the things that have limited us before. So I'm deeply grateful, and I can't express more with our heart that this is something that is going to change the entire trajectory for the Chumash people, the coastal band of the Chumash Nation specifically. Being out there in these sacred places, feeling the energy of the land, being deeply connected to our people and our ancestors, being here as a physical manifestation of our culture, it says a lot about where we are today as a people, and being able to outwardly speak that and to be honest and be open about who we are and where we stand. It shows great progress for this nation. So I'm very privileged and very grateful, and I look forward to the beautiful opportunities that this land will provide for the coastal band of the Chumash Nation, being able to bring culture and education and marine science and the many other opportunities of public outreach and education to schools is going to be great. Thank you so much.
Well said. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. That concludes staff presentation. We're available to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you very much. I'll turn to my Lieutenant Governor to see if she has any questions first.
I think there's some public comment on this, so okay. I'd like to hear the public
comment. Sure. All right. We'll go ahead and take public comment on this, and then we'll finish with our own comments. Michelle, could you facilitate the online comments?
Yes. Our first speaker will be Samuel Cohen. Following Samuel will be Paul Burke. Samuel, please unmute yourself and begin your comment.
I just want to express such joy that the Coastal Band has this opportunity to partner with the State Lands Commission on this parcel. We don't have a very good track record or model for co-management or co-stewardship in the state of California. Although we aspire greatly to implement such a model. In 2021, Senate Bill 231 was introduced by Mike McGuire to return Blues Beach to three Northern California tribes, but he forced them to join as a nonprofit and then put the land under a conservation easement so it would be perpetually open to the public forever. I don't know if that's a good model for this land or not. I think your template agreement should be made available to all the Chumash tribes, because all the Chumash tribes have similar connections to the coast and would like to share in the joy of rehabilitating this site back to its former glory. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments, Sam. Are there any other members of the public that are online that would like to comment?
Yes, our next speaker is Paul Burke. Paul, please unmute yourself and begin your comment.
I'm Paul Burke for the NAACP of Ventura County. I'm the Environment and Climate Justice Chair. I acknowledge we're on Chumash ancestral land. On item 71, which you just handled, thank you for keeping Rincon Island and the causeway. They'll give us open ocean access when the beaches disappear. And thank you for not approving any option on the SCC parcel. None of the three options protects the access road, and therefore they don't protect access to Rincon Island, which we need. On item 72, this item, we support your working with the Chumash. We value the goal of creating an open space for the public to learn about their culture and traditional practices. It's a great location, and we support the goal of eventually having public access. We did send the written comments and this slide before we saw the Santa Ynez band's comment, and we certainly have no opinion on which bands you'd work with. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your work and your comments. Are there any other speakers, Michelle?
We have no hands raised for comment at this time.
Okay. Is there anyone in this room that would like to speak? Any public comment? Please come up.
Aku, Madam Chair. My name is Matiwaya, representative of the Elders Council of Coastal Band Chumash Nation, executive director of Wichita Chumash Foundation. We're very proud of the work we've done on marine science, on working with tribal communities, Pacific Islanders, on a legal front, and also on an educational front. We were instrumental in the creation of the marine protected areas. We created the tribal MPAs. We're instrumental in stopping oil trucking in Santa Barbara and a variety of lawsuits on endangered species, on the science, the biology, and of cultural resources protection. To steelhead or condors, our work is heartfelt. We're not environmentalists. We're practitioners of nature. We're teaching, empowering, encouraging, inspiring our youth, our future leaders, mothers and fathers and teachers. We have an opportunity to write the narrative of a new tomorrow. In this facility that could be transformed into a very giving educational platform. From our science vessels to study migrations of whales and dolphins and our creation stories of our people from the island. This island represents the embryo of our future, where we can get back on the water, build our canoes, our tamoles, junior lifeguard programs, and waterkeeper programs. Restoring, recovering, and conserving the land and the health of our waterways and the threats that we face today with climate. We want a new way of looking at healthier energies, and it starts with decision-making. In this country that was born of violence in this regulatory process, it depends on leadership that we're here today to ask support for. Of our continuum, of our ability to build and to provide for all generations. No matter where you come from or what you believe or what your faith is, the sacredness and spirituality and the continuance of a healthier, better world, it depends on us. We don't want to get involved in Indian politics of what this government did to divide our people with federal and state and mission and on and on. It's who shows up. We have a great track record of Cal Naturalist programs and giving college credits to students. Tribal legal representation of students that have done internship and fellowship with us. Wistoya Chumash Foundation has been around 25 years, and we've been very blessed with 30 lawsuits that we fought for the threat to species, culture, and our communities. So to be here today and to have to share, not to brag, not to boast, but to look at the example that we've set. And we're proud of that. Because we're writing that narrative, we're publishing precedent in how we do and how we protect our natural cultural resources. So I want to thank you for giving me a moment to be here with you and to tour the island with you, and that we make good choices for a better, healthier tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll let you follow that.
That was... Thank you very much for coming down and for speaking and for working with the staff. I think every time we have a situation like this, it's sort of uncharted territory because the lands that are subject to the jurisdiction of the State Lands Commission, we are bound to act in the public trust. And when we are engaging with the Native American tribes, it creates new opportunities. And I think you mentioned education, which I think more than anything else is so fundamental for all Californians to know the history of California. And I did just want to recognize one thing, and that just had to do with process, because I know that from the beginning, our guiding principles at State Lands are to do outreach and engagement with tribal leaders across the state. This is a different situation, I think, in that it has gotten to the point where one of the Chumash tribes came forward with the with a process that you all worked with together to start with an MOU, and that that MOU, we agree that we will work together to develop a plan. And so I think it's important that people recognize this is very much a first step, and that nothing about it is exclusive to any other part of any of the other, I think, 14 Chumash tribes who are here in the region from being able to come forward and engage in a similar way. And so I think that's very important, because we did hear from one of the other tribes here, but I think making sure that we do that outreach with the other tribes so that they understand this isn't an ordinary process, simply because we're taking these steps to go forward, and we want to make sure that it is an inclusive process, so that by moving forward with an MOU with the Coastal Band, that that document itself is open and available to the other tribes to consider and to come forward and to talk with staff about as well. And we, again, are just at the very, very beginning stages of all of this, and it is a new process. But when I was out there last night, there is so much about this, and you mentioned just the feeling you have there. It really is an incredible thing to be standing in the middle of the Pacific Ocean in this way. But there's no question educational opportunities are to manifest something could be really extraordinary there. So I just would like to reiterate to, first of all, thank the Coastal Band for your forward-leaning engagement with staff to get to this point, but also encourage the other bands, if they want to come forward and talk to staff as well, that those doors are very much open. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Perrault. Before I recognize you, I'd like to just ask the executive director to, if she could tell us about the engagement with tribes throughout the process of developing this MOU. I think the lieutenant governor raises an interesting point.
Yeah, certainly. So I would actually take a step back and look at what our engagement and outreach process has been from the moment we had to step in and take over the operations at Rincon Island in the onshore facility in 2017, when the operator abandoned the operations. And from that moment, very similar to the process that we began with Platform Holly and Piers 421 here in Goleta, was very community based in terms of being very transparent and holding meetings and conducting outreach, not just with communities, but with tribal communities throughout this region, about the steps that we were taking to both make the facility safe and protect public health. And that foundation of engagement and outreach has existed until today and will continue into the future. So we have hosted many tours of the island over the past now, 7 years, including with various tribal bands and communities, through various letters, emails, outreach as part of the plugging and abandonment operations, as well as part of the EIR process itself. We have had numerous conversations with everyone along the spectrum, including the different Chumash bands. And so that engagement has continued. We were very clear in our EIR about the pursuit and priority of co-stewardship of these island, of the island and the onshore facility, and working with our tribal partners. I will also say, to the credit of the Coastal Band, they have been engaged significantly from day one. We will continue that outreach. We are an inclusive agency, and we have a well-established inclusive process. So we look forward to speaking with everyone, especially as we start to brainstorm and the vision for these properties on behalf of all Californians.
All right. Thank you very much. Commissioner Peralt, any comment?
No further comment than what I said before, but I do appreciate staff walking us through and appreciate the question from you, Chair, about just the to elaborate on the engagement. I think that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. I agree. I think that was helpful just to, like you said, step back, put things into context on where and how we got here. Speaking of stepping back, I also wanted to just acknowledge that the Native communities historically have been dealt decades of exploitation, environmental injustice, and frankly, genocide. And historical oil and gas operations at the Rincon Island shattered the Chumash people's connection with the ocean and the land. And so the significance of this MOU today certainly won't right the past wrongs and these past transgressions. And we have a long way to go to even make a dent in these past transgressions, and we owe a future debt. However, I do firmly believe that this commitment to pursue a co-management agreement is a step in the right direction. And as you heard from Ms. Lucchese, as well as the Lieutenant Governor, we are all hopeful that this will be something, this co-management structure will be something that we can utilize across the entire state. When I think about the northern part of the state, the wind farms, the proposed wind farms, the just a lot of the environmental issues and matters that we have to address with the Native communities that are along the entire coastline of the state of California. Memorializing this intent gives us a chance to uplift the coastal band's knowledge of their own land and will open the door for funding opportunities to increase tribal and public access, increase educational opportunities. And this MOI is a step toward restoring the connections between the Chumash people and the land that they have always inhabited. So I'm honored to be able to sign this agreement today. And with that, I turn the meeting back over to staff if there's any last minute comments. If not, we can continue to proceed. May I have a motion to adopt the staff's recommendation and a second?
So moved.
Thank you. Motion moved by Member Kunalakis, seconded by?
Again.
Commissioner Peralt. May we have a roll call vote?
Certainly. Commissioner Kunalakis.
Aye.
Commissioner Peralt.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye.
It is with great honor that the motion passes unanimously.
Right. Yes, with unanimity. We're going to take a real a quick 10-minute bio break for everyone. We've been going at this for 2.5 hours. So 10 minutes, okay? We will reconvene at 2:35. That we can witness this historic signing.
So as we get settled, Chair Cohen and Commissioner Kunalakis and Chair Frausto will come around, and they will be executing the memorandum of intent that was just authorized by the commission.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have time for a song, of course. We have time for a dedication. Hold on.
Oh, wow. Wow. A moment like this where we're honoring decision-making and leadership. You know, our elders, when we come through a time of transition, when we celebrate a memory of loved ones we carry in our heart, to the eagle that soars high in the sky and is protecting the land, that's the kind of work we have ahead of us. So for this kind of decision and this monumental moment, I sing you an eagle song so that we can remember how we all need to soar high and support each other. Grandfather, bring that sacred fire into our heart, that light of life that we were given when our mothers brought us into the world, and that it shines bright and keeps our faith strong in every step we take into our future. Oh. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. We are going to continue to dispense with the rest of our agenda today. We are on item 73, and item 73 is to consider delegating authority to the executive officer to enter into a memorandum of understanding with the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement. May we have the staff presentation? Thank you.
That would help, Madam Chair, Commissioners. So indeed, this is for a delegation of authority to the executive officer for this memorandum of understanding. Again, to start, my name is Joe Fable, senior attorney here with the commission. Now, BSEE is the lead federal regulator that manages safety and inspections for offshore energy production. And in many ways, they might be considered to be the State Lands Commission regulatory equivalent of federal waters. BSEE manages 23 platforms in the federal outer continental shelf. All platforms, of course, are supported by pipelines and conduit that cross state lands to shore, so either are leased by this commission or grantees. The pipelines, of course, are interjurisdictional. BSEE handles safety on the federal side. BOEM, Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, handles leasing on the federal side. Of course, State Lands Commission, State Leasing, and then the U.S. Department of Transportation and CAL FIRE handles additional regulatory aspects. State Lands Commission and BSEE do have a long history of, course, coordinating on pipeline safety, including the development of the Offshore California Pipeline Inspection Survey. Bit of a mouthful, but again, it's generally a inspection coordinating regime. Now, this MOU, it's intended to expand on this formal coordination to ensure consistent coordination and consultation regarding regulatory requirements to facilitate desirable outcomes for both the state and federal government, and to streamline communication and avoiding unnecessarily conflict and duplication in those efforts. Under the MOU, Commissioner BSEE agreed to share information, that's a key component, related to offshore oil and gas activities, pipeline right-of-ways, studies and analyses, inspection maintenance schedules, reports, and incidences, and notify each other of any proposals or projects or permit applications submitted for each agency. The second aspect is that staff from the commission and BSEE will meet regularly, twice a year, to discuss pending projects and implementation of the MOU. MOUs are non-binding. They don't change or limit the commission's jurisdiction in any way. They're really statements of policy and just how staff expects to sort of proceed forward on that issue. There's no liability that attaches. Of course, staff believes that entering this MOU, it's in the state's best interest because it opens another formal line of communication between these agencies. And information sharing, of course, is going to aid in lease administration, we believe. So for that reason, that's why staff recommends that the commission authorizes the delegation of authority. And that concludes my presentation.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate Bessie's willingness to actively come and present and be a great partner in this process. Let's see if there's any members of the public comment that'd like to comment.
Yes, our first speaker on this item is Paul Burke. After Paul, we have no hands raised for comment.
Thank you.
I'm Paul Burke for the NAACP of Ventura County. I'm the Environment and Climate Justice Chair. We support the agreement with the U.S. Department of Interior. We ask online posting of all non-confidential material shared with Interior. If Interior can have it, people in Ventura County can have it. Other agencies put inspection reports online, like water pollutants all over the country, car safety, and many more. Pipeline inspections are at least as important and of interest to the public. We've had different explanations of what inspections cover. Post them all online and it will be clear what's covered. How do citizens report violations of local rules? The commission doesn't seem to inspect that, and lessees are supposed to follow local rules too. In the June meeting, the chair asked for a tracking system for lease violation notices and cancellations. The executive officer said, this is already part of our practice. We ask you to post that online too. In April and May, we asked for written policies on violation notices and cancellations, and we've had no answer. In the June meeting, the executive officer summarized the policies. If they're not written, we ask for a deadline for writing them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, colleagues, do you have any other comments or questions? All right, seeing none, is there a motion to take up staff recommendation? I asked for comments. You have comments?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
So moved.
Second.
No, okay. Motion moved by Lieutenant Kounoulakis.
No comments. And so moved.
No, your comments are your actions. Let's get out of here. That's what she said. Let's move it forward. Okay. Commissioner Perrault, can I get a second?
I'll second, and I have no comments either.
All right. Thank you very much. Can we get a roll call vote?
Yes.
Thank you.
Commissioner Kounoulakis.
Aye.
Commissioner Perrault.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Item 74. Next item is an informational presentation on the recent history and successes of the Commission's South Elwood project. Let's have the staff presentation.
Excellent. Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Joe Babel with the State Lands Commission. And we have a presentation. Thank you very much. Just to give a quick factoid, a little bit of an update. So next week, September 3rd, the Commission and its partners will complete the permanent well abandonment of all 30 wells on Platform Holly. This is historic for multiple reasons, but one of the key ones is these make up the last overwater production wells in state waters of the Santa Barbara Channel. And that goes back from the original wells that were spudded off Summerlin in the late 19th century. So this is certainly the end of an era to indicate here. So it is my great pleasure to present this informational update on the South Elwood project, including, as we stated, its successes and plans for the future. The South Elwood project consists of multiple related components that make up one pillar of the commission's overall decommissioning program, which we heard today includes Rincon Island, also our legacy well abandonment program, and coastal hazards removal. The first component of the South Elwood project, which this commission's been engaged in for years now, has been the operation and maintenance of offshore Platform Holly, and up until 2023, the Elwood onshore facility. and that was to mitigate against the hydrogen sulfide risk emanate from those two facilities. Second component, which we are near completion, as I indicated, is the plugging and abandonment of 32 wells, 30M platform hauling into on the 421 piers. And the third component, of course, is decommissioning. So last year, the commissioners, of course, were a part of the 421 decommissioning celebration. The next component after environmental review will be the decommissioning of platform hauling itself. In April 2017, for a little bit of background, Venco LLC notified the commission that they were declaring bankruptcy and deserting the platform and destaffing the onshore facility, despite being fully aware of the ongoing need to treat the H2S gas and the clear and present danger that posed. The commission swiftly delegated authority to the executive officer to take any and all necessary steps to contain and end the H2S emergency. Now, with that, commission staff have undertaken what may be the largest program in this commission's history, which we're proud to report has achieved or is on track to achieve every goal set out by this commission. Now, since 2017, the commission has again continuously and safely operated EOF and platform hauling. These are two technically advanced oil and gas production facilities. We've staffed them 24/7, 365 days a year to manage the H2S risk. Now, we've complied with all permit conditions and coordinated with various agencies on facility safety from, of course, City of Goleta, county, state, and federal agencies. We've also returned the EOF back in 2023 to private ownership for decommissioning, and that process is ongoing. Now, also since 2017, the commission's contractors have successfully completed, again, really on September 3rd, the plug and abandonment of platform Holly's wells, 30 platform wells plugged. You can see on the bottom pictures, on the left is a before of the production deck, and then the right is an after, so a lot of removal. What has happened is in late 2022, we completed the plugging of the production zones. That's where the H2S was coming from. So H2S emergency has been abated since late 2022. After that, through a series of testing, we understood that there's 9 wells that needed to be re-drilled out on the shallow zones in order to make sure that there was no pressure. That's generally due to the active seep activity, making it a very difficult area to perform these this PNA. But that work, again, has been completed with zero pressure. And again, last production well is associated with the platform and state honors of the Santa Barbara Channel. Since 2017, this commission's contractors successfully decommissioned the 421 piers, last oil piers in state waters, ending also, again, a history of pier-based oil production. Closed that chapter. And again, the key thing, it was done on time with no upsets, the decommissioning aspect of it. So again, as we've heard today, the commission has had great success in maintaining a campaign of public outreach and engagement, not to mention commission meetings like this. 9 town halls and various outreach have been performed over the last few years, monthly interagency meetings, so again, an ongoing program of discussing with agencies all the issues attendant to this program. And then, of course, local and national media highlighting the commission's work in this. On the agreement side, this agency, this commission, has entered in numerous agreements, just given the complexity of this. The key ones are the phase 1 and phase 2 agreements with ExxonMobil, whereas ExxonMobil agreed to undertake the plug and abandonment and decommissioning of the platform. An MOU with Goleta regarding regulatory roles, access and use agreements with various landowners, and other tertiary agreements. On the legal front, this situation has created quite a bit of litigation. The big one, of course, was the bankruptcies and participating in that. But as the commission and everyone's quite well aware, the case of the Venco trustee suing the state of California, in which we did prevail after a 5-day trial in March of 2022 in Delaware. Also, this agency the commission's made new law. So again, as prosecuting its case against Plains in order to recover its costs, This agency, through an appeal process, has really changed the law. So what has occurred is that Plains, as claiming it's a public utility, had a lot of protections from liability. But again, through the appeals process, new case law developed that Plains does not qualify for some of these larger liability exemptions that they claimed previously. One thing we like to repeat often, as this is from the trial court in the Davis matter, is that the commission's action since 2017 to resolve the HUS emergency, of course, is an exemplary illustration of its police power. And of course, we do continue diligent enforcement of rights and protections of California, just in undertaking these two commissions and going through the CEQA process here. Now, moving on to the future. Once P&A is completed, as of next week, commission is moving, and we're currently in the planning to de-staff. So again, for instead of a 24 hours, 365 staffing regime, it's going to move to where we can essentially keep the platform de-staffed and inert. So that involves removal of industrial equipment, solvents, installation of solar panel and navigation equipment, and then finally decoupling the platform from shore-based utilities. So no more electricity, no water needs or anything of that nature. The largest thing we're working on right now is development of the environmental impact report. So the project itself will likely, analyze a project, which will be presented to this commission, as well as reasonable alternatives that will be informed through a scoping process, public scoping process that'll occur. And through that, again, opportunities for community participation. Scoping will be the large one after we issue a notice of preparation, which will be likely early in 2025. That starts the CEQA process officially. As of right now, we're working on baseline studies and everything necessary to develop that analysis. And of course, consistent with this commission's authority and full discretion, this commission will decide the final disposition of decommissioning along with that EIR, very similar to what we saw with Rincon Island today. So that'll be a process. We don't quite have a final date on that, maybe late 2025, 26, around that time frame. And with that, that completes my presentation. If the commissioners have any questions.
Thank you. Michelle, is there any public comment by chance?
We have no hands raised for comment at this time.
Okay, that's good. Let's go to you, Commissioner Peralta. Any questions or comments that you have?
No comments or questions. Thank you.
All right. How about you, Lieutenant Governor?
Just again, we're down here in the region, and so I think it's really important that we heard a little bit of that update. So thank you very much. No other questions or comments?
So it was only a few months ago when we celebrated the removal, as you heard from 421, and now we've got another momentous milestone that just reinforces the state's commitment to 100% renewable energy by 2045, and its end is a clear demonstration of the commission staff's commitment to public safety. So I just want to publicly acknowledge Ms. Lucchese, you, and of course your outstanding staff that is making all of this possible. This is a good example of government following its word and making good on it. I do have one question that I don't see addressed in the staff report. And of course, as your state controller, I'm always thinking about the bottom line. I'm sorry, it's just kind of a natural disposition. But with the completion of the plugging and the abandonment work, are we still on budget?
Yes, we are.
I love it. Yes. Simple answer. No, no explanation needed.
We are. We have secured state funding to continue our caretaker activities, just ensuring the platform is safe, and also to proceed with the environmental impact report. And then, as Joe mentioned, we have entered into a series of agreements with ExxonMobil as the former lessee and operator of these facilities. And through that phase two agreement, they have agreed to pay for the entire decommissioning of Platform Holly and its infrastructure, consistent with what the commission decides in terms of the ultimate disposition of the platform.
Thank you very much. Ms. Lucchese, is there anything else? Or what's the next order of business, I guess is a better way to phrase it.
Court, yes. our next order of business is our second public comment period.
All right. So if anyone wants to address the commission on any matter that's not on today's agenda, please come up to the podium or you can raise your Zoom hand and we will call on those who are in person first and then we'll move to the phone and the Zoom for those that are joining us virtually. Michelle, could you call on the first person?
We have no hands raised for comment at this time.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much. So that concludes our second public comment period. Ms. Lucchese, what's the next order of business?
Our next order of business is to move into a closed session. Before we adjourn into closed session, I do want to just make a statement regarding item 70 on the informational calendar. Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision C7, allows a state body to discuss real property negotiations in closed session, provided that before the closed session, the state body in open session identifies the real property concerned and the person or persons with whom the negotiator may negotiate. In accordance with this requirement, I announce that the Commission will conference in closed session with its real property negotiators regarding the following item. Item 70 addresses four applications for assignment of leases governing the use of existing offshore oil and gas pipelines traversing state waters associated with the Santa Ynez unit in federal waters, including the Elwood Pier, two mooring buoys offshore Santa Barbara County. The negotiating parties are the State Lands Commission, ExxonMobil, and Sable Offshore Corporation. Under negotiation are price and terms. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So we are going to go into closed session. It is exactly 3:00. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It is 3:45. We are back into public session. I'd like to call this meeting back into order. Ms. Lucchese, is there anything to report from closed session?
Yes, consistent with Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision C7, the Commission met in closed session with its real property negotiators regarding the assignment application from ExxonMobil to Sable Offshore Corporation of four leases that support the Santa Ynez unit offshore Santa Barbara County. The Commission also, in closed session, considered the matter involving the Coast Ranch Family LLC pursuant to Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision E2B. At this point, there is significant exposure to litigation against the Commission due to a legal dispute between the Commission and Coast Ranch regarding liability for the remediation of a parcel of land owned by Coast Ranch, identified by assessor parcel number 060-010-042. This parcel was used in conjunction with the adjacent state-owned parcel known as the Rincon Onshore Facility to produce oil and gas from state leases. To resolve the dispute and avoid the time and expense of litigation, the Commission accepted an offer by Coast Ranch to resolve the matter.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. That concludes the open meeting, and ladies and gentlemen, we are adjourned.